Beans are sprinting to the upside this morning and dragging corn and wheat prices along for the ride. We are headed out to Oregon to get some on-the-ground perspective of dealing with wildfires. Then it's back to a garden spot in the Corn Belt and up to where fires aren't the problem, but bears and wolves are.
Live from Whipshaw Wednesday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with Barb Iverson from the Oregon Farm Bureau. Then it's on to our Farmer Forum with panelists Marty Klinker and Ken McCauley. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Yes, Davis, thank you so much. It is clear and beautiful in the middle of the country, but boy, Hurricane Sally is dumping buckets of rain down on Mississippi, Alabama.
Yes.
And the fires continue to burn on the West Coast. We're heading out there for a conversation with Barb Iverson, who is the president of Oregon Farm Bureau, as you just said. She's dealing with them personally. They are changing the way that she is operating. It's just absolutely crazy. And you know, these fires, everybody talks about, it's a West Coast issue. Well, yeah, it is. But we see the smoke here in Iowa, don't we?
Absolutely, we do. And I don't know if it had any effect on this or not. I usually, before bed, will spend an hour, maybe two, sometimes three or four, if I'm really into it, reading, practicing an instrument, something like that. I laid down last night about 9 o'clock, and I'm telling you, I slept so deeply. I woke up this morning, I didn't know what day it was. I seriously was like,
that's a good one.
What? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's this haze. I've got the orange haze all up in my brain type of deal.
Might have something to do with it. You know what I did yesterday afternoon that I haven't done for like 6-8 weeks?
What's that?
Mowed the lawn.
Mowed the lawn? My neighbor did that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Between you two guys, now I got to do mine too.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Until my neighbor mowed, mine looked fine. There's a steep drop off now.
Oh, too funny, too funny. Yeah, we've got a great conversation going today. And then Marty Klinker from Montana put on the list of things that he wants to talk about dealing with bears and wolves up in Montana.
Okay. I love it.
Yeah, it
that's some Davy Crockett stuff he's got going on up there.
Right. Okay, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, the Federal Reserve will report on its discussion held at 1 p.m. Central Time today. The FOMC post-meeting minutes will detail the Fed's updated economic forecasts, which are expected to increase optimism for 2020's economic performance, but express increased pessimism for fiscal 2021. Important to note, Chip, the unemployment rate has already fallen below the Fed's June forecast. Now, while experts suggest the Fed may be willing to allow inflation to run beyond 2% for a time, they also expect no changes in interest rates through 2023. Other areas of focus will include adjustments to the Fed's bond buying efforts and Main Street lending. And remember, they came out with that 2% figure, said they were comfortable with that, but that's an average, right?
An average, exactly. Mm-hmm. So they had better be willing to let inflation run beyond 2% for a period of time. These Fed meetings, I'm sorry, I just have trouble working up interest in them anymore because we know what the end result is going to be. No change. Nah.
Right. Well, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Congress should remain in session until lawmakers and the administration reach an agreement on another coronavirus stimulus package. She told CNBC, quote, "We're committed to staying here until we have an agreement. We are optimistic that the White House at least will understand that we have to do something." Democrats are still pushing their $2.2 trillion offer, and some Republican senators have spurned any stimulus approaching even half that amount. Yeah. A 50-member group of House Democrats and Republicans dubbed the Problem Solvers Caucus yesterday released a $1.52 trillion coronavirus stimulus plan in a long-shot attempt to break the legislative deadlock. Imagine that, problem solvers on Capitol Hill. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Well, yeah, it used to be commonplace. Now it's just problem causers on Capitol right. Hill is what we're dealing with. No, you know what? I think they're going to be effective.
Okay, I hope so.
I really do. And if you haven't seen the NBC interview with Pelosi, you should check it out.
Okay.
Watch it for yourself.
The American Farm Bureau Federation and more than 40 other agriculture organizations are asking Congress to ensure USDA has the tools necessary to help farmers in times of crisis. The group sent a letter to House and Senate leadership requesting they immediately provide replenishment for the Commodity Credit Corporation, or CCC, through the continuing resolution. Without immediate replenishment, funding for farm bill programs could run out. Chip, the CCC back in the spotlight.
Yeah, we talked about that very briefly with Dale Moore, from Executive VP at AFBF, yesterday. We just need to see that get funded fully.
The World Trade Organization ruling against the United States, alleging a breach of WTO rules by using tariffs against China, will likely go unenforced as the organization's appellate system is currently non-functioning. U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer said, quote, although the panel did not dispute the extensive evidence submitted by the United States of intellectual property theft by China, its decision shows that the WTO provides no remedy for such misconduct. Meanwhile, the Chinese Ministry of Commerce said in a statement that it thought the ruling was, quote, fair and objective, and it hopes the U.S. will comply.
Absolutely. Well, they think it's fair and objective. I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do. Part of the problem for the appellate court there is that the U.S. just hasn't approved any of the appellate judges or the board members.
Right.
You know, so it's probably not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Margie?
Doing well, Chip.
Good. You know, your story yesterday about a sustainability pilot project was fascinating. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is being referred to as kind of a bleeding edge program in that what's really being realized here is technology, specifically in this pilot program, the Truterra Insights Engine, is providing the data and analysis and forecasting tools required to make conservation practices and the conversations around adoption more proactive. So this really brought together multiple stakeholders, all the way from farmers, retailers, Land O'Lakes, and Campbell's company, parent company of Pepperidge Farm Baked Goods, and how they can source wheat in their supply chain and also track those conservation practices and sustainability measures around the wheat crop.
Right. So what it's doing is it's giving Pepperidge Farm the ability to prove the steps that they're doing to make a quote-unquote more sustainable future.
As I wrote in the story, goldfish crackers may no longer be swimming upstream in the sustainability discussion. They were able to prove three things, and that was greenhouse gas emissions were neutral on those participating acres, nitrogen use efficiency improved, and all those conservation practices improved soil health. So three big takeaways from this pilot program.
Yeah. I mean, it's all worthwhile, and with consumer wants bending in that direction, Margie, it's going to be proof and evidence that's going to be needed to be provided in the future. Good stuff, Margie. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chip.
All right. That is Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. You can find her at Farmers Advisor on Twitter. We'll be back with AgriTalk in a moment.
Show how you farm on by purchasing name brand merchandise from Farm Journal and Cowpokes Work at Western. Visit cowpokesonline.com right now, and $2 of every item purchased will be donated to 4-H.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Davis, we've been hearing about the wildfires burning out west for weeks now.
Yes.
And we're just begging for relief in many of those areas. And one of those areas is Oregon. And we've got Barb Iverson, the president of Oregon Farm Bureau, with us right now. Barb, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me today, Chip.
Absolutely. How are you holding up out there? It's just a terrible situation that you guys are dealing with.
It really is, and not something that we deal with very often, especially up where I'm at. I'm in the northwest corner, and you know, we've been inundated with smoke and under evacuation, mandatory evacuation, things like that. It's getting better, but it's today the smoke is terrible.
Oh, man. Okay. You know, the mandatory evacuations, if you're a row crop producer, that's one thing. If you're a livestock producer, Barb, that's another. What are they doing?
Well, a lot of, you know, people really stepped up. There was a kind of a coordinated effort to help get livestock out of the area. People were volunteering their pastures. The county fairgrounds were all offering up, you know, places to bring livestock in. And, you know, fortunately, on the west side of the state, we have smaller herds than we do on the east side of the state. So it's kind of odd for us. We're more row crop, a lot of employees, things like that. So that's made it really tough for some of our row crops this time of year, and the grapes, industrial hemp is another one we're concerned about.
Right. And the row crop, Barb, I don't deal with smoke the way that you're dealing with it. So if this is a stupid question, forgive me. But when I think about those grapes, it's one of the things that I was thinking about. Does the smoke impact the flavor, anything with those grapes? And
well,
what about
Southern
the hops?
Oregon and, yeah, the hops. The hops, you know, I've heard we were kind of at the tail end of our hop harvest. So, yeah. You know, I've heard lost power. They had to throw some kilns away. But, you know, a lot of them now are pushing through. They kind of held off for a few days. And those that weren't finished up, you know, it's tough because of the air quality and the employees and having N95 masks.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a combination of factors that are making it so tough.
Right. And back to, I interrupted you with the hops there, but back to the grapes, is there an impact on the flavor?
Well, you know, they've dealt with smoke taint in Southern Oregon, Northern California for a number of years now.
Okay.
And there's some processes you can do that will help with that. You know, we're not so concerned. We have wine grapes as well, and we're not so concerned about the reds, but you know, we have white grapes, white wine grapes that are Albarino and Moscato, and yeah, we are concerned about those.
Yeah, definitely. Barb, I jumped right into this without hearing about your operation. Tell us about your farm.
We're diversified, multi-generation family farm. We farm just south of Portland, between Portland and Salem. You know, grass seed's our major crop, but we also grow variety of other things, including industrial hemp and tulips. We usually host a tulip festival in the spring under Wood and Shoe Tulip Farm and get about 150,000 people from all over the country and the world.
Stop it.
And of course, with COVID, shut that down this year. So, you know, this has just been a tough year.
Wow. 150,000?
Oh, it's incredible. It's beautiful. It's unlike anything you've ever experienced. So it's more of an experience crop. You know, people come out and they create memories. It's beautiful. But and then now with the smoke, it's just, you know, added insult to injury this year. And we have table grapes as well that we don't think that we'll be able to harvest. It's just one of those years.
Wow, that is crazy, Barb. So back to the livestock producers. What do they need right now?
You know, the farmers, people across the state have really stepped up. You know, the feed for the livestock, housing in some cases. Some people that were completely burned out have lost, you know, fencing, everything. There's no place to go with them. So, you know, feed is a big one. Hay for them. That's really what they need right now.
Okay. What about fencing materials? Anything like that needed?
Yeah, we had some panels that they were needing for, you know, what the local at the county fair, state fair, so they could house more livestock. I'm not sure where they're at on that now. As we get further in this, I mean, we're inundated with smoke today, so we're still not out of all of this. It's getting better, but it's kind of an ongoing. So there's still a lot of uncertainty.
Right, right. Okay. What else do you need as far as for the workers or anything like that? If farmers in the middle of the country want to send help to farm owners, the ranchers, the laborers, what do they need?
Well, you know, that's the hardest question right now. You know, we've got growers in Southern Oregon that their farm workers lost all their housing, you know, where Talent and Phoenix down there completely burned to the ground. And, you know, I heard an account yesterday, one had lost, you know, their employees. They had 60 employees lose their housing. So it's things like that. And they're asking, you know, I think they've got a GoFundMe page or a Facebook page. So we have a landing page at Oregon Farm Bureau, and it's OregonFB.org/wildfires. And we're going to try and get everything up on that, so people have a place to go and see how they can help. So we're working on that right now.
Sorry about that. Barb, it looks like Chip, we lost him temporarily here, but we do have John Harith with us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let me jump in there, Joe. Well, Chip lost his connection. And again, that was OregonFB.org/wildfires, right?
Yes. They go there, and then we'll list things as they come up, and we know, and there'll be links out from there. But you know, the response really from the community has been great. I mean, people stepping up to offer their pastures, and you know, even water trucks to fill ponds for the helicopters to dip water. And you know, it's just been an amazing response from the community.
Yeah, what are some of the things that farmers and ranchers from other parts of the country can do to help out those who are impacted by the wildfires?
You know, if they go to that website, that's probably the best way, so we can kind of get a coordinated effort. You know, whether it's, you know, help with people that have lost everything, you know, from clothing to you know, their pasture, things like that. I mean, it's just still in flux right now.
Yeah, do you have any sense yet of the scope of the impact on your membership at the Oregon Farm Bureau at this point?
You know, we really don't. The areas that were burned in northern Oregon up here is mostly the valleys. So a lot of small livestock producers, Christmas tree producers, things like that. So we're a little unknown. Of course, crop damage, whether it's you know, broccoli harvest or squash. You know, what's happened is we've had this dense smoke. So the plants went from like early September to October. You know, it's like they shut down is what we're seeing in our fields. It's odd because we've had this haze and smoke for so long now that it feels like October, and the plants look that way too.
Well, that's going to Barb, I'm back. I'm sorry about the interruption there. But yeah, that's going to interrupt the flow of some of that product to consumers, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. A lot of it is under contract with canneries. So those, you know, like broccoli harvest is going on. So again, we have the heavy smoke, and it's taking the employees out there in that. And everybody has N95 masks now, and the state has been good about handing those out. And they have those when they're out working in this. And we really, you know, our crew, we haven't had our crew come in for a week and a half just to stay out of the smoke. So there's that concern as well. But the fresh produce, you know, we're in late harvest. Most of our row crops are finished. There were some late blueberries, I think, that'll be thrown out. But, you know, the regular green beans, it's just right at the tail end. And a lot of those are direct to canneries. The farmers markets for the smaller producers, like last weekend, they were all canceled. So that's hard on them, too.
Sure it is. Those small producers there and those farmer markets, I mean, that's quite the business out on the West Coast.
Yes, it is. And the...
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Hey, I'm sorry. I was cutting out on you there again, Barb. Barb, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. Good luck to you and good luck to everybody out there in Oregon. Let us know if there's anything that we need to get the message out again, okay?
All right. That sounds good. Thank you so much for having me on.
You bet, Barb. Thank you. That's Barb Iverson, the president of the Oregon Farm Bureau. Man, oh man, I find it difficult trying to figure out how to even deal with what they are dealing with out on the West Coast right now. Okay, guys, When we come back, we're going to get this farmer forum going. We've got Ken McCauley from Kansas, Marty Klinker from Montana. That's next on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, beans off and running. What is going on?
Yeah, kind of a rocket shot higher this morning, Chip. More daily export sales to China, so that continues. You know, and technically we pushed out above Monday's highs and hit some stops there. So we're seeing strong gains here, mid-teens for the gains as we speak. We have been higher than that, upwards of 20 cents, and but backed off just a little bit. What we want to see is a close above Monday's high. If we can sustain that and the bullish reversal that's working right now, that would be a powerful move for the day.
Sure would be. Sure would. Corn and wheat kind of kicking and screaming, but they're coming along.
Yeah, corn market's been reluctant to move to the upside. It's trading about a penny or two higher here mid-morning. You know, that's largely on the move in soybeans, obviously, with that being the key driver there. No daily corn sales today. So we had seen those earlier in the week, but none today. Wheat market, much the same situation. HRW contracts are leading us to the upside there. But the other two markets, SRW and spring wheat futures, are showing minimal buyer interest so far.
All right. The plus sign in the livestock market is confined to live cattle. What's happening?
Yeah, I think the expectation is that we probably put in a short-term low in the cash market, but we need to see that play out first. So it's kind of just, you know, a little bit of buyer interest, but somewhat reluctant at this point, given the premiums that futures hold to the cash market. Hog market, it's under pressure again and looking really toppy in here. We filled the prior gap now this morning, and so we're getting a little bit more technical-based selling.
Gotcha. All right, Beach, thank you. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Trust in Food for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, it's Farmer Forum time, and the Farmer Forum is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement. Like Davis just said, go to www.agweb.com/ACAM to learn more about that. Let's get this Farmer Forum going. We've got Ken McCauley from Northeast Kansas. How you doing this morning, Kenny?
Doing great, Champ. It's just a great day to be alive. This weather is just beautiful, isn't it?
It is unbelievably awesome right here in the middle of the country. And thank God we are not dealing with the fires like they are out on the West Coast and like Barb was talking about. Kenny, I just can't even imagine dealing with that in a farming operation.
Oh, and or living anywhere close, not knowing if you're going to get surrounded. The news, that's one of the honest things about the news going on right now. They're showing the real deal, and it's they show just one of those small fires would engulf, like from our place to Kansas City, in that type of a circle. It's just unbelievable that you know, the fear and all the things that happen when you know what a fire does to you. It just your adrenaline just goes berserk.
Right, right. Marty Klinker up in Montana. How you doing, Marty?
Very good, Chip. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, just fine. I'll bet you've got a real good view of some of the smoke coming across from the West Coast.
We're very hazy. We've been that way off and on for the last couple of weeks, Chip. Real ominous skies as the sun goes down, and you know, red sun, and it's ugly.
Yeah, so. Yeah. That's probably the best way to put it. It is ugly, Kenny. I found it kind of curious yesterday afternoon when I was talking with Dan Utek from New Vision Co-op up in Minnesota. He was talking about his good crops, and you didn't want to be left out of the conversation of good crops, did you?
Well, you know, there's other garden spots. We don't want to be the only one, but, you know, I think we're there again, Chip.
Yeah.
Corn is just,
we sure didn't know about it, but I kept telling the guys not around the lunch table anymore, but you know, you got to have a little character, and the corn got some character, I think, because it's really rolling out this year. It's just awesome. We're having a little trouble getting it to dry down in our place, but there's guys going, some other coming out of the field 20 or less. So that's that'd be a whole lot better than 25 that we've got.
Yep. Where does the corn go in from your area, Ken?
A lot of it goes to Atchison for a corn mill. We've got the corn mill in St. Joe, Lifeline Foods. We've got some pretty good markets. And then what doesn't go to those gets exported down into the livestock chickens in the southeast. And then, you know, some of it goes down the river. We've got a new port in St. Joe now that they're talking about exporting corn down the Missouri River out of White Cloud. So we're back on the map, Chip.
Thank God for that. I love hearing that, man. What about the bean crop, Candy? How did it finish?
Well, it looks really good, but, you know, we had a little bit of disease show up there a month ago, and we didn't know how that was going to affect them. We still don't, but they still look really good to me. I mean, I think we're in the 70s on the good beans, and, you know, they'll drop down where some of them got hurt a little bit more with the dry weather. It did hurt that.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Marty, what are you harvesting up your way right now?
You know, pretty much everything's done up here, Chip, except for the canola. There's some late seeded canola. All the grains are, for the most part, in. There's a couple things, maybe late fields that got reseeded due to some spring issues that are maybe still getting pulled in, but, you know, 90, 95, 98% of the grains are done. Some of that canola is probably about, in our area, maybe 50 to 60% harvested, so just closing up the harvest season. Yeah, it was a good year up here.
Well, I was going to ask that, but first, it sounds like the crops must have been mature enough ahead of those cold temperatures that we had a week ago to avoid damage.
Yeah, everything was safe by that time. Yeah,
good.
There was no on that, but on that regard, yep.
Good. Yeah. So the yields are okay, huh?
You know, we had a good wet spring, so it was late wet spring, and then followed by ample, you know, early summer rains. That the dry lands were exceptional in most areas, and then the irrigated crops were good as well. So no, it was in the grass. You know, the grass got made early, so held very well for the cattle. So yeah,
gotcha.
We had a very very good harvest season. July turned hot and very few disruptions, a little bit of hail or this, that, like you always get, but no, very good. So,
yeah, okay. We're going to talk more about those cattle here in just a little bit. Kenny, it's been a good week for ethanol, hasn't it?
Oh, Chip, it's just great. That getting those waivers off the table is, I think it's just got to be a big load off of not only the ethanol owners and the plants, but also, you know, the demand for corn's got to be going up. Those guys probably living hand to mouth for now, and now they're going to start building some inventory. It's a perfect time for them to be buying. Not that this is a cheap price compared to where we've been, but good grief, look what the market's done in the last 2 weeks. It's just made my day for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, we've got a lot of things to be optimistic about. Jim.
Yes, sir. And it feels better. Like you're saying, it just feels better that we've got this optimism back into the markets, back into corn production. I'm not saying that everybody's getting rich at these prices, but it sure feels better, doesn't it, Ken?
Well, sure does. With a good yield, and, you know, you really feel for the guys in Iowa that probably helped this along a lot. And, you know, that's a devastating thing. But the other part of it is, that the September bids that guys think may be going to go away, they may not. You get through the harvest pressure, and it might just bump right back up into the, you know, having good demand for $4 corn after we get through harvest here. That gives you something to really look forward to.
Yes. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. Marty, how does this ethanol thing impact your business up your way? Is there much impact?
You know, When ethanol came on, it did, because it sucked a lot of acres into corn and took a lot of, you know, so more demand for wheat, barley, everything else. But seems like now wheat is the stepchild, right? We're just struggling with wheat, but so other than that, no, it's not affecting us in recent time frames, no.
Okay, what about the attitude of guys up in the Northern Plains, Marty? Are they improving? Attitudes improving along with some of the prices?
Oh, I think so. You know, farmers farm for the big crop first and price second, right? That a big crop always makes you feel good. So, I think everybody had a real good production yield this year. So I think, you know, we're optimistic. You know, we need to get past November, right? Nothing's going to be straightened out until after November. Cattle side, we're still struggling with some issues there, you know, kind of working through that COVID supply. But still the packers they hold the choke point, and they're still taking too much profit out from the producer and the consumer. They're holding the purse strings for both sides. So
yeah, it's unfortunate. I hear you. I hear you there, Marty. You know, the CFAP 2 program, we're still waiting for those details. That's something that cattlemen embraced the first time around. I would imagine that there's going to be some high demand from cattle country for those CFAP 2 funds as well, don't you think?
I would hope. I would think so, yes. Chip, yeah. I would think so, yep.
Yeah. Kenny, I don't understand the holdup on this. Do you?
Well, it's an election year, Chip. You got to appreciate these things. I think that Chairman Peterson yelled pretty loud about it when he didn't get consulted, and that's probably part of it. But, it's going to take a little more time to get this one through just because they want to, you know, both parties want to claim victory on this, I think. So, I think it's going to happen. You got to learn that elections do create some of these things, and we're benefiting from it. So that's the way I see it. I think it's going to happen, and we'll probably be better off because both sides got into it and can claim part of it.
Gotcha. What's the momentum in your area, Ken, on the presidential election?
Oh, it's pretty solid conservative for Trump. We've got a big race on our Senate seat. A lot of outside money coming in for both sides, but mostly on the Democrat side to get the seat changed. That's been 100 and some years of Republican. I think there's a lot of mud being thrown because of the outside money. It's too bad. I heard Burak talk the other day that it drives you nuts that you can't get down to the bare bones and who's going to do what. But with that outside money, it will change things if whoever gets elected. And I think that we've got a good candidate that we can keep that Republican slot. And I think that's still what's going to happen in the majority of the state.
Gotcha. Marty, Montana is always a tough state to call. Which way is it leaning, do you think?
Well, I think it's leaning Republican. A big contest on the Senate with Daines and Bullock, but as far as Trump, I think it seems to be pretty solid conservative venue. It's just a tough the Democratic platform is just a tough one for majority of Montana to put their arms around. That when you support civil unrest, or disobedience, that's just not in our wheelhouse. So I think it's mostly conservative leaning.
Gotcha. All right, we're talking with Marty Klinker from Montana, Ken McCauley from Kansas. It's a farmer forum. You know what? One thing that I want to talk with Marty about is managing those timbers. There's a lot of talk about that coming off the West Coast now. And then we got to talk wolves and bears with Marty, too. That's next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to a Farmer Forum sponsored by ACAM. And don't forget, you can get 24/7 free access to all of the great content from the Farm Journal Field Days at agweb.com/Field Days on Demand. The Best of Farm Journal Field Days is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgrow, and the new hashtag Growing Ahead initiative sponsored by Bayer. You can follow DeKalb, Asgrow on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook to see how your local teams have gone virtual to keep delivering you solid agronomic advice, that you expect. Okay, let's get back to the Farmer Forum. Ken McCauley in Kansas, Marty Klinker there in Montana. Marty, up in Montana, and the conversation with Barb Iverson was from Oregon earlier in the show. I keep thinking about it. Maybe one of the good things that's going to come of the fires, if there's anything good that can come from it, is that the conversation about timberland management is back, Marty. I'm hearing it, and I'm hearing the idea that we need to remove some of the deadfall and put the wood to use rather than letting it be fuel for fires.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We run cattle up on the Rocky Mountain front, up in the over the divide, actually, in timbered country, right up against Forest Service. We've experienced forest fires coming through the national forests right to our grazed land. And it gets to us and pretty much stops. You know, log it, graze it, or watch it burn. The ranchers, through selective logging and weed management and grazing, you know, the fuel just isn't there. So something has to happen. You can't let those resources go to waste.
Yeah. Ken, it's a conversation that that we need to have. The country's got to have this.
Oh, it sure is, Chip. And, you know, I hear these things and hear the president talking about, you know, you need to do prescribed burns and that. And when we did the RFS 2, we had meetings about biomass and what you could do with wood fibers and things. And we suggested where these timbers have been cut and managed right, you could take the branches and all the small stuff and actually make ethanol out of it. And the environmental groups just raised heck about that. They did not want any part of that. They actually thought that would be helping the timber industries, and they didn't want to do that. But the other side of it is they didn't want to do it, and it's just like people say, you could have solved this problem a lot. I've seen a lot. I don't live there, but I understand what prescribed burns do, and they really do make a difference. But environmental communities were a big part of this problem.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. Okay, so let's have that conversation. It's one that needs to take place. Marty, another conversation that needs to take place are some of the challenges that you as a cattleman face raising cattle out there in the Northern Plains. I mean, I find it hard to believe. Tell us what you're doing with your cow herd and your calf herd right now.
Well, right now we're battling the wolves and the bear, the grizzly and the wolves. That's in the last 3 years, the predator kills have been increasing at an increasing rate. Last year it was bad. Came off of that ranch up in on the front with about 16 calves, short 16 calves, and about 7 adults. And this we gathered on Saturday. We started getting pressure right away this spring, and we gathered on Saturday to get kind of a grip of what we're short. We're short 25 calves already.
Jeez.
We found quite a few calves. In the state, the trapper's been on it since May, working on it. So first, right early season, they went in and took 12 wolves out. Since that point, we're probably have taken destroyed 20 wolves, including those 12 that were taken out in the general area. He called me about just right before I got on the radio, actually, to report on what has gone on the last couple of days. They flew on Tuesday, yesterday, and didn't have any luck. They have a couple of wolves that they have collared, but they flew this morning and they shot a big black male right in the middle of my cattle. Another male got away. So it's out of control, Chip. Something needs to be done. The state trapper is doing his best. He, you know, I asked him what I can share of this information. He says people need to know how bad this is. A neighbor that has a lot of game cams, I've got pictures of wolves off game cams, 4 or 5, right in the middle of my cattle. Another neighbor that's been watching the grizzly, he'd have 1 or 2 grizzly pictures through the last couple of years. This year he's up to 9 grizzlies.
Oh, man.
Out of control.
Now, did the grizzlies cause much damage to the cattle herd, or is it mostly the wolves?
The state, we've got a cow that's marked up pretty bad. We got a couple of calves we had pictures of early that were marked up, somehow got away. And I don't know how these animals are getting out of the grips of these predators, but it's pretty bad when you see animals that are marked up and gotten away. You're wondering what you're missing. That's why we gathered to get a count. But
yeah.
That cow that was marked up, we suspect that was grizzly. And it did show up when we worked through the animals the other day. But a lot of the calves, none of the calves that had markings early on them have shown up. They're gone. So it's it's bad. Yeah, the state trapper said as well. He said the wolves are bad, extremely bad. It's terrible. But he said you got your grizzly pressure up here now is incredible as well. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know if the fish and game is relocating grizzlies to that greater area. There's just something's going on up there.
And all of a sudden they're there.
Yep, we suspect some things, but don't want to say too much.
Ken, I always make jokes about the DNR here in the state of Iowa having a love affair with predators. But we don't deal with anything like Marty's dealing with, do we?
Oh, we sure don't.
Man, that is...
This relocation deal is just, I mean, I guess you got to do it. But when you put them back into places where they don't belong, it just creates all kinds of problems.
Yeah, they go for the easy pickings. That's what they're doing. And Marty's serving up a smorgasbord for them. Man, oh, man. Marty, good luck with that. Let's keep the word out and make sure that stays a front burner issue, okay?
Absolutely. Appreciate your voice on it, Chip.
You bet. That's Marty Klinker from Montana, Ken McCauley from Kansas. Thanks, Kenny.
You betcha, Chris. Thank you.
You bet. All right. Hey, come back this afternoon. Steve Nicholson and Don Close from Rabo AgriFinance.